Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Simon and Jeremy White.
I don't go out on a line with food. I play it very safe. Food to me is sacred.
You're like Trent Edwards with food.
I am Captain Checkdown with food.
Howard Simon.
I am dumping it off for a two-yard loss to the running back.
Jeremy White.
The texter asks, what do you define as a checkdown meal?
A checkdown meal is basically just safe food. I don't experiment with stuff.
A checkdown is on the kids' menu.
On WGR.
No, I eat off the adult menu.
Do you?
Yes.
Sports Radio 550.
Had a lovely roast last night. It is Football Friday on WGR. Thanks for hanging out with us, getting you ready for the Bills game on Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. This hour of the show is brought to you by UBMD Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. For urgent orthopedic care, visit uborthocare.com.
I just spent way too much brain power actually thinking, what did I eat for dinner last night? And it took a good 6 seconds.
Meatloaf.
That's what you had?
No, I was guessing what you had.
No, turkey sandwich.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's
grab and go kind of
is
thing.
Is your kitchen done?
Still out of commission.
So is that why you had a turkey sandwich?
Everything has been grab and go. And
not really cooking.
No. Not yet.
No ability to cook anything? No.
Nothing.
No boiling, baking, microwaving? Nothing.
Nope. We've talked about this. We don't use a microwave. We took it out of our kitchen.
Oh. Yeah, I got to have one.
Turns out, yeah. You don't actually. I'm not saying you don't need it. You don't. You might. We took it out of the kitchen and don't miss it.
No,
don't need it.
At the very least for nuking the frozen vegetables. Or warming up some food, or if I'm really lazy and I just want a TV dinner, which I think I'm going to do for lunch today. The Bills are playing the Dolphins, and we're talking about, if you're expecting a blowout. Besides the obvious of getting a win, what would you like to get out of Sunday's game against Miami? Also, the Sabres won last night. Speaking of wins, they beat the Kings. And if you want to share some thoughts on that, 803-0550 or 888-552-550. We are going to construct the game plan. It's our never-ending pursuit to help the local coaches. You know, we now feel free to share advice with Ralph Krueger. Sean McDermott's joining us a little over an hour from now. Here's his game plan. Now, if I really wanted to be a jerk, the game plan would be show up for work on time Sunday. Be there at 1 o'clock, end of game plan. But I'm not going to do that because that's a little too smarmy. But we talked earlier. Miami's defense is horrible. Attack the Miami pass defense. Their best guy in the secondary is banged up, Xavien Howard. They traded Minkah Fitzpatrick earlier this year. They've only got one interception all season. Teams are completing 70% of their passes against them. They're giving up big plays, 25-plus yard pass plays. They don't get much pass pressure. So this is a game where we were talking all week. Maybe the Bills end their 300-yard drought. Either way, Josh Allen in the passing game should have success against the Miami Dolphins pass defense in this game. For that matter, by the way, you can run the ball against them too, but you should be able to attack them with your pass offense in this game and make them pay. If you flip it around, the Bills' defensive line should have their way with Miami's offensive line. It has also struggled, as have, pretty much everybody on the Dolphins roster. They are down to their, I think it's fourth-string left tackle. Their starting center has been banged up this week. He might miss the game if he plays. He's certainly not at full health. This would be a game where you could see the Bills' defensive line have their way, create some push, get pressure with four guys going through. Maybe get some. They've given up 23 sacks in five games. They have not been able to establish the run up front. The Bills should easily win this matchup with their defensive line dominating against the Miami Dolphins' offensive line. Then you get to dealing with Fitz and whoever they're going to. Their leading receiver in terms of catches is Kenyon Drake, a running back. So their best receiver is an undrafted rookie free agent whose name escapes me right now. Maybe Preston Williams.
Preston Williams, yeah. He's good.
I was going to say, a good year by what's going on in Miami. So he is a guy who's had a good year for them, but they do throw a lot to Drake coming out of the backfield. However, again, you would think the defensive line would be able to win their matchup up front in this game.
My construction of the game plan is a texter gave us this nickname, so I'm going to use it here. Just give it to Bazooka Josh.
Oh, yeah.
And ride the wave.
I forgot about that.
He was very good against the Dolphins last year. The Dolphins are much worse than they were last year. Your defense should be getting them to go three and out all the time. Try to be gentle with Fitz. We like him.
Yeah, we do like Fitz. Yeah.
Put that in the game plan if you could be gentle.
Sack him nicely.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah.
He was great at the Fred Jackson roast,
Lord, so
like let's be nice to Fitz if we can. I hope they just throw it a lot.
Yeah, they should be able to, and they have,
and
they have done that.
That has been their identity so far this year to be a heavy pass team. You know, you might hear us mention that from time to time that the Bills are one of the more pass heavy teams in the league. It's not just that they're pass heavy; it's almost shocking to know who they're up there with. Here are the top five teams in pass run rates through week six, okay?
Yep.
Adjusted pass run, which means score effects come into this. This isn't when you're up late, you run the ball. When you're down, you pass the ball. Kansas City is one.
Yeah.
The Bills are two.
Behind Kansas City.
Cliff Kingsbury's Arizona Cardinals are right behind the Bills. The Saints are four, and the Patriots are five.
How about the Bills are two? I didn't even need to know who's around them.
Who are these guys?
The Bills are two in the entire league, right? They're throwing the ball. They're using the pass.
And I wonder if it is at all because when you have a defense, you just, why wouldn't you approach things a little bit differently and say,
yeah,
we could do whatever we want. I don't have to worry about my defense giving it right back. It's like, we've made this comparison. It's like when you're playing hockey and you've got Hasek in net. Sure. All right, he's back there. Right. So
if you get an odd man rush.
Yeah, we're playing a different sport on sub-level. We have such freedom here to do what we want. So, do we know that that affects their decision to pass it as much as they do? Not really, but wow. To be right there with Kansas City and Cliff Kingsbury and Sean Payton and the Patriots is amazing to me.
It's funny. I was thinking about that with the Mahomes injury. Like, Breeze goes down, you would think, oh, my goodness, the Saints are screwed. They just lost Drew Brees. And Bridgewater comes in. They don't do much their first couple or three games offensively, but they keep winning. Why? Well, they've got a really outstanding defense. So if you score 14 or 17 or whatever they got against Jacksonville, 13, no big deal. Their defense is good enough they could still win football games, and they're unbeaten with Teddy Bridgewater. I wonder what happens with Kansas City. That's not a great defense. So, you know, if he's out for an extended amount of time and Matt Moore is the quarterback, maybe Kansas City looks to trade for a guy. I don't know. The Bills have a defense that allows the offense to fail. The Saints have a defense that allows the offense to fail. The Chiefs don't necessarily have a defense that allows the offense to fail. The Chiefs win because they usually outscore the other team, unless they're playing Joe Flacco in Denver. So I'm curious to track that because their defense I don't think is good enough to just keep bailing them out week by week if their offense can't produce anything. Josh Allen against Miami. I looked it up because I wanted to see what his numbers were last year. In the loss at Miami, the Charles Clay game, he was 18 of 33 for 231 yards. He ran nine times for 135 yards. They scored 17 points and lost that game. Then the game here was the blowout at the end. See, this will be like last year's finale. 42-17. He throws only 26 times, 17 of 26, 224, three touchdowns, and he ran for another 95 yards. So in two games against that team, now they don't have Kiko Alonso attempting to track down Josh Allen anymore, but in two games against the Dolphins last year, Josh ran for 230 yards. And he threw for 455 yards and five touchdowns. Half of his touchdown passes last year came against the Dolphins. So show up for work Sunday, and you should win the football game. Constructing the Game Plan, brought to you by Admar Construction Equipment and Supplies. Equipment you need when you need it. 803-0550 to join us. Let's go to Ron in Alden here on WGR. Go ahead, Ron.
Good morning, guys. First of all, Howard, thank you so much for last Saturday night coming to my event. You were so funny. You and like Paul Hamilton, Koziel, and
Greg Bauk, former afternoon show producer, was the cut up of the night.
Funny. Yeah, talk about stealing points all night, man. You guys did a great event. I appreciate that for the charity. Sure. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Here is my question. I'm sorry, I'm going to burst your bubble and turn to hockey here for a second. But and this probably goes a little bit more for Jeremy. Here we go. I am getting tired of seeing all the analytic fighting on Twitter between the non-analytic people. It almost reminds me of the tank year, pro versus. It just seems like the analytics people, I love them. I mean, you guys have chat on once in a while. And I like them. I like both sides. But the fighting's getting unreal. I mean, every night I said to some, I just put out there, I think Erod's going to get scratched. He's not looking good. And Jeremy actually said yesterday about, you know, Erod not looking good on the radio. And, you know, of course, I get attacked by different, not even analytic people, just people who follow analytics saying, oh, no, Erod's our best player. He's got to be on here. If the coach scratches him, he's dumb. Well, then he gets scratched, and now our coach is dumb. And is it becoming just so analytics that we're not looking at it as a sport anymore? It's almost how I look at, like, we can't sign that guy. It costs too much money. I'm not a general manager. I want good players. Let them worry about it. I just want to know, is analytics becoming so much between the fans? It's not even fun to talk about sometimes. And I just want to know what you guys think about it. Thanks.
I mean, I don't really see any of the fighting myself.
I see it occasionally on Twitter. I really could care less. For me, it's more information. I'm always trying to find more information to figure out how I can determine whether this team is good or bad or that player is good or bad. So the more you have out there, like I was reading an article yesterday, who is Dom LaSession? Chad, I think, retweeted it. Mm-hmm. This guy does analytic stuff. Mm-hmm. And he was pointing out, like, Dahlin's 5-on-5 ice time is ridiculously low.
It's way
low.
Down. He's like, playing third pair of minutes.
He was the lowest among all defensemen on the Sabres before last night's game. He had the lowest 5-on-5 ice time among all defensemen on the Sabres.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if that makes Ralph Kruger a bad coach, but it does lead you to, like, well, what's the reasoning behind that?
This guy's trust good. Him put, yet? Or...
Right. So and it was pointed out, his ice time when they have a lead versus his ice time when they are tied or trailing. And when they're trailing, his ice time is fine. But when they have a lead, it's coming down 5-on-5. So I'm all into it's insight. It just gives you more of an idea of what's going on, and I think it's another layer to help you understand what's going on out there. I wouldn't necessarily take it as a be-all, end-all and say Kruger's doesn't know what the hell he's doing. You got to play Dahlin more. But, yeah, it does give you insight on different things.
The only people treating it like a be-all, end-all are the ones that want to fight against it, because the people that use it don't treat it as a be-all, end-all. They're constantly open to more information.
Yeah, and that's what...
I think
there's so much out there.
I think oftentimes the word is demonized by the people that don't have time for it, don't want to hear about it. You know, change it to information. Would you like more information about your team? Yes.
Well, the stat you gave about Josh Allen, about the Bills' passing attack, I saw that tweeted out yesterday.
About how often they're passing?
The adjusted percentage, and they're second behind Kansas City. Great, I didn't know that. I mean, again, I don't use this stuff to determine black or white, but if there's more information for me to understand my team, my players, all that, why not read up on it?
Yeah, you get to decide what kind of sports fan you want to be. If you want to be the person that doesn't care about the salary cap, go for it, you know? There are going to be people that care about the salary cap and that think that drafting a running back first overall is a terrible idea. If you want to draft the running back first overall, go for it, you know? There are disagreements within the sports. Dave Gettleman did a thing that other GMs would never do in drafting Saquon Barkley second overall. So, hey, there are disagreements within the sport, which is another part of the reason where when I see the arguments about it, I think that these arguments are silly. The sports are using as much information as possible.
Yeah.
The Sabres are, of course, player tracking. Why does Ralph Kruger decide he doesn't want to have any morning skates? In part because he thinks that it will do good things for their energy in games. And, you know, he's not the kind of guy that's just going to play a hunch. He's going to ask someone to look into, is that real? So, you know, this the war on information, you want to open up a franchise for coffee, guess what you're going to do? You're going to study the area. You're not just going to walk onto a plot of land and say, feels like coffee town here, you know? I think people are going to want coffee here.
It's a good location.
They're going to study your demographics and your location and how far you are from other coffee shops and all that. So, targeted advertising, everything, you know? If you're trying to get something done in a competitive market, of whatever that market might be, you're going to use as much information as possible.
Yeah.
So whenever I see people arguing about it, I just think, "What are you? You must be threatened by not threatened by it. Maybe you see
you're
too many
resistant to change,
or you see too many people who you think blindly follow."
I think there's two things. That's one of them. You would think that people use that as the be all end all, which you don't. I don't think the Bills do. I don't think the Sabres do. It is a layer in the discussion. Or if you're me, you're older person like me. You're like, well, this is not how we do this. I'm an old school guy. I don't need all. It's too many numbers. I just will watch Rasmus Dahlin and tell you if he's. So yeah, you can be resistant to change because it's something new and this is not what you were used to when you grew up as a sports fan, or you would resent it because you think someone is just there. There's a GM sitting there, and every single decision he makes for the organization is solely based on the analytics information that his analytics department has presented to him.
But even that would be information.
It's valid information.
It's based on all the information
it's
he has.
It's actual hard information. It's not based on a gut. It's not based on guesswork. It's actual information based on what you're seeing on the field.
I mean, it's all,
on the ice.
It's all in the definitions. I mean, at one point, people would have scoffed at the idea of running the 40 at a combine. Why do I need to see how fast he runs? Why do I need to stop? I don't need a stopwatch. I can see him. He's fast.
Yeah.
Well, you can use a stopwatch, you know.
Right.
That's analyzing the data of how fast a guy runs. Right. So, anyway, yeah, there you go. I don't know. Is that a definitely not a concise answer. But on Dahlin, he looked good in the first period last night. And then the second period, you know, they're up 2-0 and 3-0. They go into their shell.
Mm-hmm.
The Dahlin thing is weird. Maybe he's taking time to adjust to the new system they're playing. Maybe he's a little bit hesitant. Maybe he's, I don't know. He's not looking like he has for most of last year. Last night I would have said he looked pretty good in the start of the game as they were playing the first period. And, you know, you're out west. It's a back-to-back. You don't want to get 82 of these things. You can't exactly take every single game and say, well, this represents who they are and how they are. You know, if there are changes that they can make when Montour gets healthy, who comes out? You got an answer?
I don't know.
No idea.
I think most of us are anticipating it's Ristolainen.
You really think it's Ristolainen?
Maybe it's Scandella. Maybe it's McCabe.
When Montour comes back, they're going to take...
I'm talking about trading.
I'm talking comes out of the
sitting.
Lineup. Someone will have to come out of the lineup.
Yeah, I don't know. Whoever's not playing well at that point.
Whoever had a bad night
comes out. And the next guy goes in. And the next person has a bad night, he comes out.
It can't be just... It's not going to be Dahlin.
I don't think it'd be Jokiharju.
It can't be Jokiharju, and it won't be Scandella because those two are together and they've played pretty well.
Yeah.
Ristolainen and McCabe get their number one minutes. Are they going to take Colin Miller out?
No. It can't be. It's not going to be Miller.
So now we're
put Miller ahead of Scandella and Ristolainen.
Who?
Miller and Dahlin and Jokiharju on my they're not coming out list. Where's their reason? Miller's
and Scandella, fine. I just don't think
Scandella looks good with Jokiharju.
Right,
yeah.
So I don't think there's any way they touch him. And the other two are their minutes leaders.
It's funny, there was a play last night where Scandella actually got beat. It didn't lead to a scoring chance, but he got beat in a one-on-one matchup. And then Jokiharju was there to get to the puck and you know, kind of bail him out. And I thought, I think that's one of the things that you would point to. I think Scandella's playing just fine, by the way. I don't mean to tell you that he's getting beat all the time, but there was just one play in a game last night that made you think Scandella gets beat last year and there's, you know, rump roast to bail him out. Scandella gets beat this year and there's Jokiharju in the right spot to get the puck to stop the play from going anywhere for Los Angeles. So it's a nice combination. The veteran player is being helped out by a steady young defenseman who he can trust. And if there is a breakdown by Scandella, this team doesn't get burned by it. Last year, Scandella would get beat. Who the heck is bailing him out? This year, he's got a really good defense partner, and I think he's probably playing with more confidence because of that.
They talk about a trade on the afternoon show a lot. Bulldog keeps saying he's holding out that they're going to make a trade. I hope so, because I'd like a number of different things to do. One of the things I'd like to do is I'd still like to get Olofsson off the top line. And maybe if you can trade Ristolainen for somebody that goes on that top line and Olofsson slots elsewhere, or maybe Skinner goes to the top line. He was good there last year, yeah. And am I wrong to say we could see that again? I'd like to see that line dominate again.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if Kruger does tinker around with that a little bit. If he takes maybe he leaves Olofsson on the number one power play, but puts him on the Johansson line, or maybe I don't know if he'd put him on the Mittelstadt line. I think he's trying to get some kind of continuity for Mittelstadt, and that line last night with Sherry and VC were fine. So I wonder how many more games Olofsson gets, and if he feels he's not as effective 5-on-5, maybe he puts him down with Johansson, and just the easy thing is to maybe just flip-flop Skinner and Olofsson and see what happens.
Maybe. Got to trade somebody. It's going to be a fun day when Montour comes back. I would think he goes in. I don't think he just sits. The instigators talked about this. What if they're still winning? Are they going to break up a winning lineup in finger quotes? Or, you know, would they, we're going to give Brandon time to get back. Now he's got to get back in game shape, make him wait another week.
I guess you'd have to look at it and you'd have to say that all six defensemen are playing at the top of their game. There's no reason to make a change in the lineup, which I don't think would be the case.
And one thing about Montour, I mean, he's a player that I've liked for a long time. And his underlying analytics or numbers in Anaheim weren't always great. When he came here, they weren't great either. But everybody that played for Phil Housley.
Yeah, their numbers were all
it was,
bad.
It was pretty bad.
Right.
So maybe in this system, Montour is their second best defenseman. Maybe he's their sixth. Who knows? I mean, the way that Dahlin is not kind of jumped off the page and had a tremendous second season right out of the gate. Makes you have a little bit of pause, but be a fun. We should have some sort of bet who comes out when Montour comes back.
Yeah.
What Pilot comes back. And Bogosian.
Who says Pilot comes back?
Where they put him in Roch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he stays in Rochester. I mean, right now they have seven defensemen with Gilmore here. And then when Montour comes back, that's eight, barring a trade of one or two guys. Who's Pilot coming in for? You know, he might just stay and play in Rochester and let him get his minutes down there.
And do you think Bogosian ever plays again?
I would tend to doubt it. I don't even know if, I mean, what do you do about, does he just sit out the year? Does he stay on long-term injured reserve? Or do you think there's
a
team that would pick him up at the trade deadline for 1 month of salary
if
as a veteran defenseman?
If he stays on long-term injured reserve the whole season, they get cap relief and they could
that would help.
Swing at the deadline.
Yeah, that would help. You don't. If he's healthy to play at the deadline, someone wouldn't pick him up for a month. Like, just say, all right, here's a veteran defenseman. We'll just grab the guy for a bag of pucks. Maybe. I don't know what happens with him. But to further your discussion of who comes out when Montour is ready, okay, what about Bogosian? What are you doing then?
He doesn't dress.
Yeah, that's right. So I wouldn't expect him to play. And if there's any way you could get anything for him in a trade at the deadline, I would assume that Jason Botchel would do that. He's only got this year left on his contract, right? Right.
Yes.
He doesn't have another year. He's in his final
year. It's just this year,
yeah. 803-0550 to join us. It is also in talking about the Sabres there, but off Football Friday. We've been talking about the Bills, too, getting ready for Sunday's game, which we'll have here on WGR. 7 o'clock, Bills breakfast with Derek and Lou. They'll get you started. 8 o'clock, it is game day. Countdown to kickoff at 10. It's a 1 o'clock game. The weather looks great. Mid-60s, sunny skies. And very little wind, like 5 to 10 miles an hour. Post-game with Shope and the Bulldog, overtime show at 6. That's our plan on Sunday. Murph will join us next, and we will get his thoughts on the matchup between the Bills and the Miami Dolphins. 803-0550 for you to join us, or 888-550-2550 on WGR.
I don't have a specific name for you because I don't want it to go viral. I don't want to get radioed until I know for sure. But I do believe that the list of defensemen or the number of defensemen the Sabres have looked at out there in terms of moving is bigger now than just number 55.
Speaking of other defensemen that maybe the Sabres would look to trade, who knows? That's Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet. He was on the Instigators yesterday, basically, saying that they know what Ristolainen's value is, so the Sabres, he wouldn't give out any names, but the Sabres are looking at value of other guys because they have a defensive logjam and they know they're going to have to deal with it at some point.
I'll give names. McCabe.
Yeah.
His name came up in rumors in the summer with Florida. McCabe. Other names that they would consider? Pilot, maybe? Bogosian? I can't imagine Bogosian has value because he's hurt.
Scandella is also a guy, final year of his contract, what are you getting
maybe.
For him, right? I think Scandell's in the final year.
I mean, Botrell could be the kind of guy that trades for a guy and then spins him somewhere else. I mean, whether that's he's traded for Miller, Yoki Haru, and Montour.
Mm-hmm.
All three of them, maybe you call and find out, yeah, I traded for this guy, so I liked him, but you like him even more than me.
I like him. Don't trade any of those guys.
No, I like all those guys, too. Sabres beat the Kings 3-0. Carter Hutton dubbed Starter Hutton by Trey White. In the Trey White Goalie Academy.
Oh, that's right. Did Carter go to the Trey White Goalie Academy?
They had a nice, the Bills had a nice little thing with Trey White asking Bills players about hockey and rules of hockey. It was pretty funny. Sabres 3-0 over L.A. Goals from Casey Mittelstadt. He had two. And Connor Sherry. They're at San Jose tomorrow night. Evander Kane had a hat trick in the first period two nights ago.
Not too shabby.
Mm-hmm. John Tavares' broken finger. He's out at least 2 weeks. Tampa beats Boston in a shootout 4-3. Montreal beats Minnesota. Bruce Boudreau's on the hot seat. Wait to see him get fired and probably picked up within a month.
Mm-hmm.
He always gets
another
job. He won't
be out of work. Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Bills injuries limited. Brown and Milano were both limited. And Ray McLeod signed to the practice squad after spending a little vacation in Carolina.
Yeah, I'm sure it's nice down there. The big injury last night in the NFL, Patrick Mahomes, dislocated kneecap. Further tests today, an MRI to see if there's ligament damage. There are multiple reports this morning saying the best case scenario is that he misses only 3 weeks. KC beat Denver last night 30-6. Let's get you the NHL standings update brought to you by Arthur Pressman, Western New York's traffic and DWI attorney, your ticket to justice. Sabres now 6-1-1 after the win over the LA Kings. They are first in the league in points with 13. They have the best goal differential in the league, plus 12. They are tied for the most regulation overtime wins with 5. They are tied for the best home record in the league at 4-0. And they are second in goals for. Their 30 goals scored, second only to the Toronto Maple Leafs, who have 31. That's a quick peek. By the way, the Bruins have 11 points. If you're wondering about the rest of the division, Tampa with 9, Toronto with 9, Montreal with 8, Florida with 6, Detroit with 6, and Ottawa, the Miami Dolphins of the NHL, have 3. The standings update brought to you by Arthur Pressman, Western New York's traffic and DWI attorney, your ticket to justice. 803-0550 for you to join us and talk Bills Dolphins with us. Or if you want to share an opinion on last night's Sabres victory over the LA Kings, that's fine. But it is Football Friday, and we want to get you ready for the game. The Bills having a chance to open the three-game homestand with a win and up the record to 5-1. We'll have Sunday's game right here on WGR. Of course, it'll be Sal down on the sidelines and John Murphy up in the broadcast booth alongside Eric Wood. Murph joining us right now. Football Friday appearance brought to you by M&T Bank, the official bank of the Buffalo Bills. Mr. Murphy, it's Howard and Jeremy. Good morning. Happy Football Friday.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
I'm good. We're good. You know why, Murph? Because I am 100% confident this is a win on Sunday, and I'm going to even say, Murph, it's a stress-free win, too. Take care of business, beat a team you should beat, and I am expecting nothing but a Bills victory to go to 5-1.
Then why bother watching, right?
Well, I mean, I have to. It's my job. I got to talk about every nuance and every single snap Monday, so I have to watch.
If you're 100% sure, I don't know what you do. Yeah, look, I think they're going to win, and I think they should win, but stuff happens in the NFL. You know, most games are close. Most games are 7 points or less. And the Dolphins have been historically bad. 38-point differential, minus 138 over their first 5 games. But I still think, they're desperate. You could hear the desperation come out of that locker room after their loss at home to Washington last Sunday. They've got a quarterback who's very streaky, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and if he gets in a hot streak, yeah, he could make a difference. He doesn't have a whole lot around him, obviously, to help him. But I'm never going to a game 100% sure of the outcome, but this one looks pretty much like it's going to be a Buffalo win, no question about it.
Yeah, I think, look, if you laid out a scenario where how could it possibly be an upset win for the Dolphins, I think everybody would say Fitz has a crazy game. Like, he throws for 350 yards, 3-4 touchdowns. But there's two things about that, Murph. You brought up one. The weapons around him, including the line, are not very good, and he's not going to do that against this defense. I mean, this defense is playing incredibly well, or was going into the bye week.
Yeah, they're playing as well as anybody defensively in the league over the first 5-6 weeks of the year. You're right about that. And you're right about Fitz, too. He's coming off a really good year at Tampa last year, set some franchise records, quarterback rating of 100.4, and I think he had like almost 9 yards per attempt passing last year. But you can see now with the different setup in Miami with, as you mentioned, an offensive line that's really shaky, I mean really bad, and lack of weapons other than Devontae Parker. He doesn't have a lot to go to, maybe Mike Gesicki. He just has no one to lean on if he's going to make big plays and make a difference in this game. He is more dangerous, obviously, than Josh Rosen, but does he have enough to make a difference in this game? It's unlikely, I think.
Murph, with the defense, this may be splitting hairs, but the bye week is all about team self-scouting. Is there anything you think the defense needs to do better?
Well, I've asked that question a couple times around the building to players and even coaches and Sean McDermott. They're looking for more takeaways, obviously, and they have a decent amount, but they're looking for more. I think other than that, there's not a whole lot more they can do better than they have. Obviously, the loss of Harrison Phillips does not help, but they managed to plug that hole in the game against Tennessee a couple of weeks ago with the way Jordan Phillips played. More sacks would be nice, more takeaways would be nice, but they don't really have a kind of a defining play defensively yet. When you shut people down, I mean, what was it, 44% of opponents' drives go 3-and-out? That's amazing. I mean, that's shut down defense, and they're really good at it. It's hard to find anything you could ask them to do better defensively.
By the way, if you flip it around, Miami's defense is doing that on 14% of the drives.
Yeah.
So, now let's turn over to the Bills' offense. Now, you can put together a list of things they need to improve on. What would be at the top of your list for that unit?
Two things, minimizing turnovers, and number two, minimizing penalties, especially the pre-snap penalties, and they know it's been hammered into them over the last week and a half or so how you're killing yourself. You know, the Bills are a top 10 offense this year in terms of the yards produced and moving down the field. They have several long scoring drives. All but one of their scoring drives is 75 yards or longer. But they kill themselves with pre-snap penalties that make it more difficult, and with turnovers, which, you know, they got a handle on in the Titans game a couple of weeks ago. I think this offense is still evolving, and I don't think we've seen the true identity of this Bills offense yet either. And the return of the lineup, I anticipate, from Devin Singletary this week should add a dimension to the offense that has been missing, sort of a dynamic playmaking dimension, especially in the run game. And I'm interested to see if he plays what Tyler Kroft can bring to this offense. So, yes, they will have some talented tight ends in with Lee Smith the blocker and Dawson Knox and Tyler Kroft. And I'm interested to see how Ryan Daboll intends on using those three talents. I think, you know, as my weekday partner Steve Tasker said, they've got a lot under the hood, you know, offensively that they haven't really tapped yet. They've got weapons that haven't played much, just 10 carries so far for Singletary. Yeah. And a lot, maybe certainly a lot of room to grow, but if they take care of the turnovers and minimizing pre-snap penalties, and then they can work those new elements into their offense, I don't think we've seen the real identity of this Buffalo offense yet this year, even with a 4-1 start.
Yeah, you can add two weapons to your list. You have Devin Singletary and Tyler Kroft, as you explained. You can add Duke Williams, who only has one game with this offense and look good. And you could really add Robert Foster, who has had three targets, no catches, missed a couple games with an injury. And, you know, based on the guy we saw the last half of last year, certainly looked like a component that would help the passing game. So that's really two other parts that you could go in and say for the next 11 games, you hopefully will have contributions from them too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Two important pieces of the passing game. And that's what I mean. I mean, I trust Brian Daboll has a good handle on these players, but he doesn't really know what he can get and how much he can use Devin Singletary. I think with the recent, you know, kind of nagging injury to Robert Foster, the Bills know that he's a deep threat, but they want to see him do it now. And it didn't have a great preseason or training camp, so I think they're looking to see him kind of return to where he was last year. And the deep passing game is a component that they're going to need moving down the stretch here, you know, with two-thirds of the season yet to play.
And it's a color rush game.
Oh, I forgot. They're all red.
Yeah, all red. Cool. You have a favorite color combination for the jerseys when they wear home and road?
I like the all reds, I guess. Mm-hmm. I like the traditional, you know, blue and white. But if you have to have a special color, yeah, I like the all reds. Was it the Green Bay game 4 years ago or so when they were all red and they had a big upset win over the Packers? That was kind of the right way to start that, I think.
I remember them wearing red against the Jets.
The color rush game on a Thursday night? Yeah, I don't remember the Packers game. That's a good question, Murph.
Yeah, I like the Reds, too.
It's a sharp look.
Yeah.
It really is, a very sharp look. All right, Murph, have a good call on Sunday, and we will talk to you on Monday.
Okay, thanks, guys.
John Murphy joining us on Football Friday on our Western Hotline, and his segment with us brought to you by M&T Bank, the official bank of the Buffalo Bills. 803-0550 for you to join us. 888-550-2550. We'll talk Bills-Dolphins matchup with you. And Sean McDermott, Bills head coach, scheduled to join us.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Around 9:15. On WGR. Welcome back. Football Friday continuing here. 803-0550 to join us. We'll talk Bills Dolphins with you. Also, we spent some time talking hockey this morning because the Sabres won last night, if you went to bed early.
Huge news on the Sabres front. Big breaking news just coming across my phone right now. I have apparently sold a pair of tickets to the game, a game, upcoming later in the season at the price I paid for them. This is great.
First time since.
I can't go to this game, so it's listed, and it's listed as
with face value, huh?
I got face value.
First time since.
I mean, if it's a big day.
Just curious.
Yeah.
Which game?
Saturday against Ottawa in November.
Ooh, that's like, it's not quite guaranteed win day against the Dolphins, but Ottawa's not good.
Face value. A lot of times I'll put
face
my
value
I'll put,
for Ottawa.
I'll put my tickets up as convince me not to go unless I know I can't go to a game, and then for Ottawa it was like I'll take what I paid.
Yeah.
And I got it.
Not too shabby.
That's actually a great improvement.
Let me give you a quick heads up for your sports weekend. Of course, we're all over the NFL and the Bills are playing, but we like to tell you about some of the top college games. There are actually a whole bunch of good matchups this weekend. Now, if you don't stay inside on Saturday, I'm not going to yell and scream. It's supposed to be really nice this weekend. So if you want to get outside, I'll let it go. But there are a lot of good games. Actually,
look at how wonderful fall is being to everybody. It's going to rain 2 days this week. How about Wednesday and Thursday? Does that work for everybody? And then we'll make the weekend beautiful.
The weekend looks great.
That's right.
Next week,
even when it rains this fall so far, it's picking its spots.
Hey, hashtag fall is elite. I think we might hit 70 next week.
Mm.
What are your thoughts on that in the fall?
A little warm.
Okay.
You know,
because you're in
hoodie and shorts,
right? Yeah, hoodie and shorts. Of course, in your usual attire.
I'm in my uniform. Yeah, hoodie and shorts.
All right. So here are your top college games, including the locals. Syracuse plays tonight. Did you know they're playing tonight?
Yep.
7 o'clock at the Dome against Pitt.
Yikes. UB. They're going to lose to Pitt, aren't they?
Not necessarily. No. What have you soured on UB? On
Syracuse,
rather.
It's been a sour season.
You could be Pitt. You could. UB plays tomorrow at Akron. That's a 3:30 game. We'll have it on our sister station, ESPN 1520. It's also on ESPN 3. Tomorrow, Florida and South Carolina. Now, normally I wouldn't say, watch the Gamecocks, but they just came off a big upset over Georgia. That's a big game for Florida. That's a noon. You got Clemson-Louisville. I don't know if this will be a close game, but it is still fun to watch Trevor Lawrence do the throwing of the football with Clemson. So that's at noon on ABC. LSU-Mississippi State. LSU, speaking of having fun watching an offense and the quarterback do the throwing of the football, watch Joe Burrow if you haven't seen him. He is a hot rising name on the draft charts, the quarterback charts, the Heisman charts, everything. So LSU-Mississippi State at 3:30. If you're a fan of the Pac-12, I don't know if you are, but you got some really good Pac-12 games, too. Battle of the two top 25 teams, Oregon and Washington at 3:30. And then Herm Edwards has done a hell of a job turning around Arizona State. We're just watching the 24/7 show they're doing on HBO. They go behind the scenes with four different college football programs, and they just aired one with Arizona State. They play Utah at 6, and then I guess the game of the weekend, Michigan-Penn State, Saturday night. 16th-ranked Michigan at 7th-ranked Penn State, 7:30 on ABC. I went with, I guess it's the game of the weekend, because quite honestly, Michigan on the big stage under Harbaugh has failed miserably. His record against top 10-ranked teams on the road against top 10-ranked teams is terrible. So they're at Penn State, and the winner basically will be the team that competes with Ohio State for that division in the Big Ten, and we'll see if Harbaugh can win a big game. If he doesn't, the heat will go up even more on Jim Harbaugh because he hasn't won any really many big games at Michigan. So those are some of your top college games for tonight and tomorrow. Enjoy all of the football. When we get back, we've got Scaff coming up in the next hour. We have Sean McDermott with his regular Friday visit. Bills head coach scheduled to join us around 9:15. We'll talk to him about the team coming out of the bye and Sunday's matchup against the Dolphins.
Wonder what he did. He got a bye week, right? Travel.
Yeah, and he gave the team the whole week off, too.
He did say in his press conference this week he got a chance to watch some football. Which he normally doesn't do, apparently doesn't have time for. So find out what game he watched.
803-0550 to join us on our way to break. Let's give away a pair of tickets to see Trans-Siberian Orchestra. They're going to be at KeyBank Center Saturday, December 14th at 8 p.m. Minimum value of the prize is $100. The tickets are courtesy of Metamorphic Concerts, and general contest rules apply. Derek is awaiting your phone call. 644-9878. Oh, nice. You're wearing the Trey White Goalie Academy hoodie. That's very nice. I like that. 644-9878. Caller 5 will win a pair of tickets for Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Call now for your chance to win. If you need tickets and you don't win them, you can find them at tickets.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.